Hello and welcome to the Latte Lounge with founder Katie Taylor and special guests here on Radio Gorgeous with me, Josephine Pembroke. Hi Katie, welcome back to Radio Gorgeous. What's been going on with you?
Well, April's been a party-filled month for me. Woo-hoo! I turned 50.
Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Don't look it.
Oh, bless you. I feel it. So, so I was feeling fine about it till someone said, how do you feel about being half a century? And that kind of threw me completely. But it's been, I have celebrated in style. I had an 80s theme party.
Hysterical.
Where we danced to Wham all night, and I was whisked off to Venice by my husband, which I've never been to.
Oh.
So it's been great, and we've been very, very busy in the Latte Lounge. We've had an amazing Easter competition with some fantastic prizes for some of our members. We were actually interviewed in Elite Business magazine. I was talking about juggling home and family life with work life, which I know you've been doing a lot of juggling recently.
A lot of juggling
with four kids.
Yeah.
And we actually focused this month on MS awareness. We've actually got a couple of members who've got some unbelievable stories. One of our members, her mum had MS and her husband has MS, and she actually wrote a blog for us about how to cope with that. So
it's sort of like for people who wanting to find out if they're one of the carers, it would be a good thing for them to read.
Yeah, should have a read of it. Mm. It's on our website, the blog, and we focused on that because it was MS Awareness Week. It's been another really busy month in April, and I've brought in a very special guest today.
Exactly. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, darling.
So I'd like to introduce you to Karen Hobbs. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Karen is the Cancer Information Officer at our charity partner, the Eve Appeal. And I wanted to talk to Karen because you're about to launch your Get Lippy campaign. Is that right?
Yes, we are. So Get Lippy is launching tomorrow, which is the 1st of May, and it will be all throughout May. It's a month-long campaign, and it's our second year running it.
And can you tell everyone a little bit about what it is and how we can all support you for it?
Imagine if I just said no and people had to guess. good question. So Get Lippy is a campaign run by the Eve Appeal, the UK's gynae cancer charity. And it's a month-long campaign where we are encouraging people to literally get lippy about gynae health. So there's a fundraising element, of course there is. So we've got some amazing partners, lip companies, makeup brands, some clothing brands. So we've got like Vaseline, Smashbox, Karen Millen, who are all donating a percentage of a sale of a particular product to the Eve Appeal throughout the campaign, which is amazing. So the fundraising element is to buy one of the products that's supporting us, and that's amazing. We're very grateful. And the awareness raising side of it is to either wear the product, the top, the lipstick, or just wear nothing if you want to pose naked, whatever, or your own lipstick, and just take a photo of yourself, you know, pouting, hashtag get lippy, and then saying just something about women's health, whatever that means to you. And we've got a 1-minute challenge on social media where we're asking people to, on Instagram, film themselves for one consecutive minute, just talking about anything to do with gynae health, female reproductive system, vaginas, whatever getting lippy means to them, and tagging the Eve Appeal, and, you know, posing with, you know, blowing a kiss and tagging someone in it and asking them to share it. Basically, it's about spreading the message about being comfortable about talking about women's health.
Mm. And is that actually just on one day, or is that the whole of May?
So it's a month-long campaign. So the companies are with us for the whole of May, and we're going to be sharing information and relevant content throughout all of May. The Get Lippy Day, where we'd like there to be a sort of peak in activity, is Friday the 17th. Right. But we are grateful for anybody buying and sharing anything at any point. But 17th is the main day.
Okay, great. And, you know, we announced that you guys were our charity partner a few months ago, but I just wondered if you could sort of tell everyone a little bit more about what the Eve Appeal does, just, you know, so they can get a more detailed information.
Yeah, of course. So we are the UK's leading gynae cancer research charity. So most of our money that we raise goes into research, medical research. So lots of charities and organisations raise funds for cancer cure and cancer treatment, which of course is absolutely vital, and we need that completely. But less than 5% of cancer research money goes into prevention, and even less of that goes into women-specific cancers. Mm. So at the Eve Appeal, we have our main research site at UCH, University College Hospital in London, joined with UCL, and it's the Women's Health Department, and basically we look at early detection, risk prediction and prevention of gynecological cancers. So a really exciting project that our team are working on at the moment is called 4C, and it's looking at how to potentially predict the development before it started of womb, ovarian, cervical and breast cancer. So four cancers, 4C. And doing that, we're just using the... So when you have a cervical screening test or a smear test, the sample that's taken, only about 10% of it is used for the smear test itself. So we've been using the leftover samples from women's smear tests, which isn't, you know, sort of any extra invasive procedure for them. We're just looking at this leftover sample. The team are working to understand what triggers there might be. So that's a really exciting project we're working on at the moment. And then the awareness side, which is where I sit, so spoken about all the medical stuff, the fun stuff, is to raise awareness through doing talks in workplaces, communities, sharing as much as possible on social media about signs, symptoms, risks, case study stories, because I think it's really important for people when there's a sort of serious medical cancer side to something to hear the human side of it. So we try and share people who've been affected as well.
Yeah, I actually went on the lab tour for 4C a few months ago. It was absolutely fascinating.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. And one of the things that I keep finding astounding, I mean, I know we had ovarian cancer month in the UK in March, but I think we've got it coming up in the US in May. And in fact, there was a lady in the press yesterday who was saying that ovarian cancer, her GP never felt her stomach, and she kept being sort of told it was sort of some gut related thing. And that's quite common, isn't it? It's quite worrying. You hear about a lot of girls who are bloated, and that's one of the symptoms. Is that right?
Yeah, tell us some symptoms, please? That'd be really good.
That's my job, so I would be happy to. You're so right, Katie. So ovarian cancer has the, I hate saying worst prognosis because that sounds so serious and sinister. Yeah. It's frightening. But out of the five gynae cancers, so you've got womb, ovarian, cervical, vaginal and vulval. And ovarian cancer has the worst prognosis overall because the signs are so often confused with just like what you were saying, gastro problems. Mm. The main signs are bloating, but not bloating that kind of comes and goes if we've eaten something funny or, you know, had too much pasta or had a late night and not let our tummy settle. It's persistent bloating. So the word persistent, or persistent saying persistent, it's the key word here. It's bloating that doesn't come and go, that, you know, it's a swollen stomach that isn't budging,
right,
no matter whether you know, cut down on fizzy drinks or whatever. And needing to go to the toilet, that can be number one or number two, poo or wee, more or less often. So a change in bowel and urine habits. That doesn't look the same for everybody. So somebody might be constipated and then have diarrhoea. Somebody might suddenly be constipated for the first time ever. Do you know what I mean? It's a change in your bowel habits. Everybody's different. And it's also feeling, we all know how much we can eat and what our sort of full levels are, but it's feeling more full more quickly and feeling a little bit sick when you're trying to eat. Again, not just on a one-off if you're feeling particularly stressed, but it's this persistent tummy, bowel problems. And it's diagnosed often at stage 3 or 4 because it's horrible. Bad. Yeah, it's really bad. Yeah. It's really bad, sad, unfair and distressing and frustrating. But it's because the women diagnosed eventually with an ovarian cancer are so often misdiagnosed with IBS, another gastrointestinal problem. And it's important to stress, I don't kind of want to wag the finger.
How many people in a year get it in Britain? Let's kind of not worry too much, if you know what I mean. What are the figures?
About just over 7,000 women get ovarian cancer every year in the UK.
That's quite a lot.
It is a lot. More people get womb cancer.
Okay.
Even more people get breast cancer, bowel cancer. So it's in the grand scheme of cancers, it's not high up on the list, but it's often misdiagnosed.
What if, like, you're suspicious you have it, but your doctor isn't? Can you go and ask for a second opinion? Or
yeah, so it's important to stress that it is most likely a gastro problem. So these signs are way more often going to be a bowel tummy issue. But if you're sort of sent down the gastro pathway at a hospital, you're referred and nothing comes back, I don't want people to then think, oh, I don't have anything to worry about. It's really important that as patients, we put in the effort as well. I know we all do need that referral from the doctor and we can't take ourselves to the hospital, need someone to give us the appointment with the specialist. But if the IBS route comes up clear, just go back to your GP and say, I'm still having these issues. They've ruled out gastro problems. And GPs, because ovarian cancer isn't that common, it's not as common as a cold, a GP isn't going to see many cases of ovarian cancer in their career. Mm-hmm. And even when they do, it's confusing with other symptoms. It's not like, you know, if it's a funny discharge or bleeding after sex, it doesn't seem like a gynae issue. So it's kind of sometimes difficult for...
Seems like a stomach problem.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So it's sometimes difficult to acknowledge that it might be a gynae issue because it's not common for GPs to see it. So sometimes it sounds really basic, and I don't want everyone listening to, with a bit of bloating, to suddenly go in and say, I've got ovarian cancer, to their GP. But sometimes it's just a case of saying, hello, I've had these persistent bloating and tummy and toilet problems for a few weeks. I want to rule out ovarian cancer. The GP won't think, oh God, she's coming in here being a hypochondriac saying she's got ovarian cancer. The GP wants to rule out serious problems. We work with so many different medical professionals on different levels, and they want to tell you it's not good news, because obviously, you know, IBS isn't great, but it's better than cancer. They don't want to give you a bad diagnosis. So sometimes it's about not being pushy, but being kind of assertive and confident in what you're asking for. And it's okay to say, I've got these symptoms, they're persistent. Again, that's the key word. I want to rule out ovarian cancer.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, with my whole sort of perimenopause misdiagnosed as depression, and the whole point of our website and our Facebook group is actually empowering women to sort of be clued up on information, because, you know, GPs, you know, they have such a huge job to do that,
and
they can't
only have 10 minutes
exactly
what they literally say. Yeah, you're only allowed 10 minutes.
And I think the thing is, and it, you know, the NHS is amazing in this country, but, you know, to be a specialist at every single thing is quite tricky.
Well, you're general practitioner. What does that mean?
Exactly.
So I think you're specialising, and that's okay.
In fact, quite often doctors have looked things up in books and on the computer when I've been there.
So I think it's, you know, it's so good to sort of empower women with as much information as possible and be advocates for themselves in some way. I mean, interesting, this young lady in the press yesterday was saying that she ended up going to her home, which I think was Macedonia. I could be wrong, I'll check it out. And in their country, they actually have gynae checkups every year, and whereas here in the because the NHS you don't necessarily go and see a gynae from the age of 18, whereas they do. So she was sort of saying in their system tends to, I don't know if this is true or not, but, you know, picks things up earlier. But, you know, and just tell us about, you know, I don't want this to be all doom and gloom.
No.
And obviously I want to talk about the Get Lippy campaign as well. But just tell us quickly about the other sort of womb and vulva, because these are sort of, these are cancers that a lot of women haven't even heard of.
Yeah, totally. You know? So, yeah, I think you're right. We hear kind of ovarian cancer and cervical cancer because there's a screening program for cervical cancer, so most people have heard of it. But womb cancer is the most common of the gynae cancers, yeah? And isn't it crazy?
Never knew that.
People haven't even heard of it, and it's, you know, the most common one. Over 9,000 cases every year in the UK, which sounds very scary, and it is, but it tends to, again, kind of sweeping with a general brush, of course there are tragic cases, but it tends to be diagnosed at an earlier stage compared to ovarian cancer that we were just talking about, because in over 80% of womb cancer cases, there's a really clear sign, which is so important to for us to kind of get out and talk about all this, like you were saying, and empowering each other, because the signs are often there in a lot of cases. So the most common sign for a womb cancer is abnormal bleeding. And that can mean loads of things. There's three of us sat here. That will mean something different for all of us. We're all different ages. Our bleeding patterns, if we're bleeding every month, are going to be different, look different. If we've gone through the menopause, it means bleeding after the menopause. It's abnormal bleeding. So I speak to people that who are, say, mid-50s and... So I run the information service at the Eve Appeal called Ask Eve with our amazing gynae nurse, Tracy. Information on the website, it's free. Call us with any questions. I speak to people who are sort of over menopause away, so 55 onwards or whatever, and they'll say, I'm 54, 55, and I haven't had a period for 5 years, normal. I've just had a period. And it's important to stress, most likely not womb cancer, don't want people to freak out. But if you've gone through the menopause, which means you haven't had a period for 12 months or more, that's going through the menopause, that bleed isn't a last hurrah of a period. It's an abnormal bleed. It is not a period. It needs to be checked out. For people who are still menstruating, it can mean a bit of bleeding in between periods. But again, it's difficult because that's not uncommon on particular types of contraception to have a bit of bleeding in between periods. But it still should be checked out. And it also means bleeding after sex for people of any age. Wow. So bleeding after sex, any type of sex, there being blood. That isn't normal. It's not uncommon. Certain conditions or, you know, even certain positions can mean that you bleed sometimes a little bit, but it needs to be checked out. So in womb cancer, unusual ready discharge or abnormal bleeding presents in most cases. So if we know that that's not normal to bleed when we're not supposed to, again, it's different for all of us, then it can often be cured with not just surgery, because having a hysterectomy or womb removed is obviously a big deal, it's a big operation, but often with womb cancer, radiotherapy and chemotherapy isn't needed because the sign is there at an early stage. So if we listen to that sign, it's often caught early.
So what would you do to cure it if you're not doing either of those?
So if it's caught later, then depending on how advanced the cancer is, sometimes debulking surgery is done first, so to remove the organs before starting chemo or radio, and sometimes it's the other way around to try and shrink the cancer before operating. So it kind of just depends at what stage it's caught at as to what way round the treatment's
given. Is it more
common
in midlife women?
Apart from cervical cancer, which is at its most common in women under 45. Again, any of these cancers, we speak to people in each decade, sort of 20s onwards with each cancer. So, but typically cervical cancer is the, air quotes, younger cancer. It's in women under 45 and all of the others. So vaginal and vulval tends to be in women sort of 70s and over, and women ovarian at least over past menopausal age. But again, anything can happen to anybody, so any age needs to.
Tell us about vaginal and vulva, because I've never heard of those.
And that is so common. People might have heard of womb, definitely heard of ovarian and cervical. And then when I do talks and say, let's name the five cancers, it's like, we get to those three, and I really have to, like, what's between my legs? Come on, guys. So vaginal and vulval cancer, they are the most rare. So vaginal, there's only sort of 250 cases every year in the UK. Still too many, of course, but not compared to, for example, womb cancer. So the most common signs for vaginal cancer are like an itch internally. So it's important to know the difference between vagina and vulva. So most people, you know, if a person with a vagina spreads their legs, they'll think what's between their legs is the vagina. That's not, that's the vulva. So vulva is external, vagina is internal. And it's got the word in it. That's how I remember it. It's vag inner. I'm like, vagina's inside. It's got the word in it. Vagina's inside. So like an internal itch, an unusual discharge. So that could be a bit of a bloody discharge, or it could be a discharge that, look, everybody has discharge. We all have discharge. It smells different for different people at different times of our month. But a discharge that smells really unpleasant, it's most likely an infection of something and it's not serious, but it is also a sign of a vaginal cancer. So an unusual discharge with that smell, look, an itch internally, a lump or bump inside the vagina, not on the outside, inside. So I try and really encourage people. We're all taught to check our breasts. Mm. That's kind of part and parcel. Mm. Whenever I do talks, hands up who checks your breasts. Mm. Everybody with breasts. Exactly, hands up. Everybody with breasts, put their hand up. And then I say the same, okay, who checks their vagina? Everyone never. Puts their hand down. I don't know whether that's because it's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
No, yeah. I've never thought, I'm going to check my vagina.
For lumps, yeah.
I thought, I'm going to have a wank.
Yeah,
but that's usually on the outside, isn't
yeah.
it? I'm
like
a clitoral
stimulation.
Yeah, so I don't... Yeah. So we've got to start... Okay.
Yeah, got to start fingering yourself. Yeah, good excuse. So it can be when you're masturbating. It could be like fun. You can do it for fun and think, okay, while I'm here, I'll just have a feel for lumps and bumps. But it also can be when you're checking your boobs, you can think, okay, I'm just going to give...
Yeah, in the shower.
Yeah, exactly. It can be like a bit of a medical MOT or when you're pleasuring yourself. It doesn't have to
be... What would you use? You can a middle finger or...
Whatever feels most comfortable for you. So the middle finger's the longest. Yeah. So you can probably get further up and feel more with that. But if you're, you know, naturally quite like either dry or tight, you might want to put a smaller finger up there just if you feel a bit uncomfortable. If you're not aroused, it might be uncomfortable.
So you just whir it around.
Literally, just see what you feel like. We're all going to feel different. We're all built differently. But if you do it sort of every few weeks, then you'll get to know what it feels like. Yeah, exactly. Knowing your body is a real key message. If you'll know your body and if you can spot any changes. And with vulval cancer, a kind of an external itch, lumps or bumps on the labia. So again, touching yourself is a fantastic idea for pleasure and medical reasons.
But also
lumps and bumps on the vulva are most likely going to be a little blocked gland or an ingrown hair or something. But
just get it checked.
And any skin changes. So I hope lots of people with vulvas get a mirror and look between their legs, but I know lots of people don't because we're all busy and it's effort and a bit embarrassing and all that sort of thing. Look at what your skin looks like. Everyone looks different.
What's so skin coloration?
Skin changing. So, again, look every few weeks at your own vulva. And if there seems to be a sort of raised patch of skin or skin that suddenly becomes like red or discoloured, again, not likely to be something super serious, but it is also a sign of vulval cancer. So every sign and symptom for every gynae cancer has got a more likely benign condition, but also on the other hand could be a sign of cancer. So whether, you know, like masturbating, knowing your toilet habits, knowing your period cycle, knowing what your labia feels like, knowing that you don't normally bleed after sex, all of that stuff that can be uncomfortable to talk about, it could save your life.
And I mean, the thing I love about the Eva pill as well is that you have this Ask Eve. So this is can you just tell everyone, is it a telephone hotline with any gynae worries or problems?
Very hotline because I'm manning it. I
wish you could see the gorgeous dress that she's wearing. Yes,
we'll take a photo.
We will. It's a bright red dress with black leopard skin, and it just sums your personality up.
And the red lipstick. Yes,
and the red lipstick. But done hastily on the tube.
But tell us about the
Ask Eve is run by me. So I'm not a nurse, but I know lots of stuff and also had cervical cancer a few years ago. That's how I came to work.
We need to discuss that as well.
So I came to work for the Eva Pill because I was talking about my own experience. But our gynae nurse, Tracy, who I run the service with, is the font of all knowledge. So people can phone. The details are on our website. It's a free phone number. And if we don't pick up because we're not in the office or it's the weekend, then people can email nurse@evapeel.org.uk. And we check that every day. So sometimes we're out and about. So Tracy spends half of her time with Eve and half in the NHS. So it's important that we have someone that's currently, a gynae nurse.
What's the phone number? Can you just... Oh, you don't? Oh, I'm testing you now.
Oh, no.
We'll put it.
We will
put it all down later. Don't worry.
It starts with a zero.
Or 800. No.
We'll put it at the end.
Okay. People can call or email with any type of gynae query. So, because we've got Tracy, who is a clinical nurse specialist in the NHS for gynae cancer, if somebody has got, a sort of sadly more serious question about gynae cancer, if they've had a recurrence, if their sister's just been diagnosed and they don't know how to help her or what questions to ask at the next appointment because everything's too overwhelming, all that sort of thing. They've got Tracy, who's NHS, gynae cancer superwomen, and can break down what results mean or tell the person, oh, this is going to probably be what happens at the next appointment. That, you know, kind of the heavier side of it.
Yeah.
And then the easier questions I get to answer. So anybody that wants to know anything about like cervical screening or HPV or signs and symptoms or the risk, you know, they're worried that their mum had ovarian cancer. What does it mean for them? All of that sort of stuff. We're there to help. And sometimes I think in appointments, they're so quick and you forget to ask certain questions. So we've got kind of us there to give that extra level of information and support. And sometimes people just call or email wanting to know if they should bother their GP. I hear that so often.
So often.
Yeah. Like, I've been, you know, they'll say, I've been bleeding after sex for a year and a half.
Oh, dear.
I don't want to bother my doctor. Oh.
But also, isn't the thing that it's down there, and isn't it the shame? I mean, isn't that one of the problems?
I think it's a lot easier for us to say to a doctor, I've got a headache, rather than my vulva hurts every time I have sex. Because it's, first of all, talking about sex, for example. Yeah. Second of all, it's probably going to mean an examination, which means taking your knickers off in front of someone you don't know. Mm. Then it's the body image worry, and then it's, there might be certain cultural or religious barriers that mean you can't do that, or you're not allowed to show your body to someone. You know, there's so many, like, it's not just a sort of, you know, educated white woman issue. It's like, I mean, people, you know, like me, young, educated, white, you know, nice family, all of that sort of stuff, might feel a bit embarrassed or not used to that sort of thing. But there are, you know, people with learning difficulties that can't understand the letters that they receive from the doctors. There are people that, you know, as sex workers, so don't or homeless and don't have a registered address, so can't go for an appointment. There are so many different reasons why people aren't looking after their gynae health. And it's like, it's just touching the tip of the iceberg to talk about kind of embarrassment.
But I think that's what's so great about the Get Lippy campaign. It's about breaking down taboos. You know, making everyone aware, you know, what is normal, what's not normal.
Exactly. And as I was saying earlier, like a doctor we're really keen to use the voices of medical professionals, because a doctor just wants to check you're okay. There's no need to worry about what they're going to be thinking about your body. That is not a thing. They just want to, in a cervical screening, take a good sample of cells. In a vulval examination, check that that isn't ingrown hair. Do you know what I mean? Like, feel your tummy and see if it's gas or it's something more serious. They just want to do a good job.
Mm. And just briefly, because we must obviously touch on it now, we know. Can you tell us, you know, just we've only got a few minutes, but obviously I'd like to talk to you for longer about your own personal journey. And,
I'll do like a quick slideshow, audio slideshow. So when I was 24, which is a few years ago now, I was bleeding a little bit in between periods, like we were talking about. I thought it was because I'd back-to-backed my pill packet because I was on holiday. That's really common. Everyone's like, been there. So again, don't worry if that's you. It's most likely a hormonal thing. And then when I got back from holiday, I had sex with my then boyfriend and there was a lot of bright red blood. And that worried me, because the pill packet, I bled a little bit before when I'd been on holiday and didn't want a period, a breakthrough bleed, we call it. But the bleeding after sex had never happened. And I'd been having sex for several years with, you know, several people, all shapes and sizes. So I knew this wasn't normal. I knew the red blood wasn't normal. So I went onto Google, which is a good thing sometimes. Google, Katie. And it's a bad thing in some way, because the horror stories are on the internet.
Yeah.
But I didn't even consider it could be anything like cancer. So actually, Dr. Google saved my life, because it, when I put in bleeding after sex, it lists what it could be. So cervical cancer was one of the things. And I thought, I'm too young for a cervical screening, because I was 24.
Wow.
I'd missed the HPV jab at school because I was too old. So I was in this sort of, I didn't know anything about cervical cancer because I'd not had an examination, not been given the letter that my mum had told me then about the vaccine. I didn't know anything.
Wow.
So to cut a long story short, was diagnosed about a month later with 1B grade 3, which means small but nasty. So I had surgery, but I didn't need chemotherapy because it was contained. So I had a radical trachelectomy, which means they take out all of your cervix, which you imagine sort of head on, so to speak, looks like a donut. And then if you're sort of standing up, it looks like a long sort of tube connecting vagina to womb. So that was removed, and the top third of my vagina was removed. Fertility comes up a lot. People always want to know if you've had a gynae issue, can you still have children? And I want to say, first of all, can't you congratulate me on surviving? I've never been pregnant, so I don't know how fertile I am, but my womb and ovaries weren't affected. So however fertile I was before, I still am however fertile that is. So I can still get pregnant if I could ever get pregnant. But I, because there's no cervix to hold the baby in and then to dilate, there's about a 30% chance of miscarriage / premature birth, depending on what stage it is, what you call it. I don't really know too much about that. So you have to have a little stitch put in if you decide you want to have a baby, and then you have to take month 6 to 8 quite easy, because the baby gets heavier and the stitch might break, which is fine by me. I'm like, that means I'm like I'll take that
more Netflix
exactly
for me.
The plus side of cancer. And then you have to have a cesarean at about 8 months. That's the only reason I kind of went into detail on that, is because as I'm getting a little bit older towards 30 and I've got a boyfriend, people always want to know.
It was the first thing that crossed my mind.
And that's fine. It's an, we do typically associate gynae health and things with loss of fertility. Can edit that bit, can't you?
No, I can't actually.
I'm joking. Fine, thanks, Josephine. Loss of fertility. So they're, you know, it's a big old subject. Like, I'm obviously very grateful. The surgery was horrible. Took ages to get over.
Was it scary for you?
Oh my God, it was so scary. It was when the doctor said, so I went for the kind of hospital appointment where they took a biopsy and all of that sort of thing. And they had to obviously wait for the results to come back before telling me it was cancer. But I'd had, so other things it could have been was like an STI or something. So I'd been for those checks and knew it wasn't that. So it was getting more likely that it was cancer. So when I went for that biopsy appointment, I just thought, is it cancer? And he said, we have to wait for the results of the biopsy. Totally right, you do. But I was like, come on, what do you think? I had to know that, because I couldn't wait 2 weeks not knowing how likely it was or not. Do I skip down the street or do I prepare for it? I needed to know something. So I said, can you give me not like a clue? I didn't like give him money to tell me. But what do you think? And he said, I've been doing it for 30 years and I'd be surprised if it wasn't cancer. Oh,
wow.
So at that point, I knew I had to wait 2 weeks for the official results, but at that point,
in a way, it's better because you're being let down gently.
It was stages, Josephine. I really found that important, because I can't. I mean, people I speak to
it's
every
shot,
day at the
otherwise,
end, get
yeah.
a total. I'm just going for this fairly regular checkup or test. I've got cancer.
Traumatic.
I barely coped with what I went through, so I can't imagine the nothing to everything.
Yeah.
So I'm actually not glad, but
that he gave great, you
it was a little bit incremental, which I think helped me ease myself into it rather than something.
But it also must help you relate to people when they're ringing up, that you've actually, you know, been through it yourself. Is that how you came to work for the Evapool? You wanted to do something that was relevant to what you've been through?
So I started writing a blog about going through cancer. So I haven't written anything on it for ages, so I'm not going to promote it. just follow me on social media. I do much more fun stuff there. But I started writing about it because I thought, I was 24 and had a gynae cancer. I didn't know what to do, what to think. Am I going to die? What does it feel like when you come out of the surgery? Practical things, like when can I have sex again? I didn't know these things. So I started writing a blog because, also, I don't want to belittle anyone's experience or, you know, patronise people with using humour and laughing things off. But humour really helped me cope with, not deny what was going on, but deal with certain aspects of the situation and how serious things were and the consequences of some things. So I found, and that's why I do stand up about it all now, to try and kind of, I think if you can laugh about something, you're a bit more likely to relax and then take in information about something, because you feel calmer and less stressed and on edge, and it's not as serious. So I started writing a funny blog about it, and then Athena, the CEO of the Evapool, said, do you want to come and do a talk? So that's where I first met Tracy. She was doing a talk with some college students. So I went and just as a volunteer did a bit of a talk about my experience. and it went really well. And they were like, do you want a job? And I said, yes, I do.
Yeah, amazing. Really? I mean, that was so something positive has come out of something.
Doing various talks and writing various bits. But I think it helps that they've got a gynae nurse on the end of the phone or the email, and she can tell you, you know, the really in-depth medical stuff. But also there's someone that knows what it feels like to worry or to be told the bad news. So I think between us, we've got quite a few of the bases covered, and just nothing's too embarrassing.
Yeah,
I get that it can feel it is, but it's not.
You and then, make it, you kind of dissolve the embarrassment. Because
I hope so, Like, it's, we've all got these parts, and sometimes the parts go wrong.
Yeah. Which is, well, look, thank you so much for coming
in.
It's been great. We really, really did.
Really interesting to meet you, Karen.
And thank you for coming. And also thank you to Latin Ange for supporting.
No, listen,
it's to have another platform and like to get lippy about stuff.
Absolutely. And I think, and Josie and I are going to just talk for another few minutes afterwards, but we've got our July the 3rd, actually, Josephine, we've got our charity spa day, and actually it's to raise money for the Eve Appeal. And Athena's actually coming in to sort of tell everyone at the beginning a bit more about what you do. So,
amazing,
you know, any way that, you know, we can support you, it's, you know, my pleasure. I mean, obviously, you and I haven't discussed, but Josephine and I have before. You know, my father's a breast cancer professor, and I've grown up with him always wanting to help, you know, women's health. So for me, this is quite a personal thing to sort of carry on that baton for women's health and, you know, get the word out there. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So
tell me, thanks so much again, Karen. Tell me what's coming up in May, Katie, on the Latte Lounge?
Well, May, it's actually the anniversary of our website. We launched literally this time last year, and it's been amazing, as I was just saying to Karen, to actually have a landing page for the Facebook group. Is just, you know, it's been a real learning curve in terms of, for me personally, having to sort of build it. You know, I'm not an IT pro. But what it's shown me is that there is so much need for good information. And every day people are coming on the group with all their issues. I mean, it's not just women's health, anything to do with the sandwich generation. And to be able to have a platform where we can put up blogs from, you know, people like the Eve Appeal, and to sort of answer their questions in a very sort of safe way, a very easy to understand way. But for me personally, just to be able to signpost women, you know, because often, you know, a bit like with the Ask Eve helpline, people, it's always 11 o'clock at night when women have, you know, especially with families, you put your kids, you know, the kids have gone to sleep, the husband's been fed, you know, you've been fed. And it's like that downtime. And we get so many private messages and posts at 11 o'clock at night where women start thinking, well, actually, I don't know how to cope with this, and this. So it's actually great to be able to signpost them to a hub with hopefully, you know, some answers. So, you know, the website's been brilliant. And as I said, it's a year now. We're actually, you know, going back to the Eve Appeal, Dr. Ellie Cannon and I, Dr. Ellie is actually an ambassador, isn't she, Karen, for the Eve Appeal. So actually on May...
Who is she?
Ellie is a GP, isn't she? But she's also often on Sky News.
Yeah,
and the
Mail. She's GP by trade and has ended up kind of sort of a TV and online media doctor as well, various appearances and newspaper columns and things. So GP, and is still a GP, but has a kind of media element to her work as well.
Great.
So she's got a lot of followers, so we're always happy to work with her.
So Ellie and I are actually going to do a vlog on what we're going to Ask the Doctor month. So I'm going to sort of collate some very common questions that keep coming up on our Facebook group and actually, you know, do a video interview with Ellie, sort of with some sort of sensible, clear answers. Because I think video is king nowadays. I think people don't have time to read a lot. So, you know, we're asking all our members who are listening if there's any sort of common complaints or worries you want me to ask Ellie, you know, please email me, katie@lattelounge.co, and I'll do that. But as I said, we're gearing up for the spa day in July. Amazing. I mean, we've literally got 9 tickets left.
Oh, great. I'm going to buy one today.
Yeah, so it's going to be a fabulous day. We've got Liz Earle, MBE, who talks a lot about, you know, midlife health and well-being. So Liz is going to be on our panel of experts with Dr. Louise Newson, who's a menopause GP, Diane Danzybrink, who runs our Link group. We've talked about Diane before, the Menopause Support Network.
Well, I'll come and do a podcast. And Jane. There. I'll come and interview people.
Fabulous. Yeah. Okay. And Josephine will be there.
Yeah, gorgeous.
And Jane Lewis also, who's written about a book called My Menopausal Vagina, will also be there. And then the members are going to have a lovely spa day all day at the Grove Hotel. It's a whole day sponsored by Silk. So, you know, please, if you want your tickets, hurry up. There's only a few left. So another busy month. We're also concentrating on, you know, talking about cancer again, not being doom and gloom, but because the weather's warming up now, Skin Cancer Awareness Month and how to protect your skin. Loads going on.
Fantastic. So, yeah. Thank you both of you coming on to Radio Gorgeous. It's been a fascinating talk today. Katie from the Latte Lounge and Karen from the Eve Appeal, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much for having
thank
us
Thank you
again.
So much for having me.
You can always find amazing women on Radio Gorgeous. Thanks for listening.